Hi, I'm Stan Brakhage, and today I feel like talking about love of women. It's been very difficult across the 20th century for men to express love of women in words, and that because there's been too many centuries of lies, so many endearments in language, and so much harsh reality that many women have come rightly to feel a hatred of the language of love, even the word itself, used so much in hypocrisy. And for artists, this is a problem, of course, no less than for anyone else. In fact, it's their charge to revitalize the language. One of the tactics for doing this has been to play with it outrageously, to make fun, which would be easy but could also be a hurtfulness, like lies. But the other is to play with it out of deep love and feeling. Not since Lewis Carroll, perhaps, has anyone made a poem quite like the one I'm going to share with you. And it's made by a painter, Kurtz Vitters, mostly famous for his beautiful little collage works, pieces of trash and discarded objects that he'd collect on the street and weave and paste together into magnificent little treasure chests of pictures that now are considered great masterpieces of 20th century art. But he was a man not content to just deal with collage of image, but put together poems, both in French and English, and we're fortunate enough to have him reading his poem, Anna Bluma, the voice of Kurtz Vitters.
To Eve Blossom. O thou beloved of thy 27 senses, I love thine, thou thee, thee thine, I thine, thou mine, we. That belongs, by the way, not here. Who art thou, uncounted woman thou art thou? The people say thou wert. Let them say. They don't know how a church tower stands. Thou wearest thy hat on thy feet, and walkest about on thy hands. On thy hands walkest thou. Hallo, thy red dress shredded into white folds. Red I love Eve Blossom, red I love thine. Thou, thee, thee, thine, I, thine, thou, mine, we. That belongs, by the way, in the cold fire. Red Blossom, red Eve Blossom, what do the people say? Price question. One, Eve Blossom is nuts. Two, Eve Blossom is red. Three, what color are the nuts? Blue is the color of thy yellow hair. Red are the kernels of thy green nuts. Thou simple maiden in everyday dress, thou sweet green beast, I love thine. Thou, thee, thee, thine, I thine, thou mine, we. That belongs, by the way, in the fire grate. Eve Blossom, Eve, 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 I drip thy name. Thy name drips like soft candle wax. Dost thou know, Eve? Dost thou already know it? One can also read thee from behind. And thou, thou most glorious of all, thou art from the back as from the front, Eve, Eve. candle wax drips to caress over my back. Eve Blossom, thou drippy beast, I love thine.
So, Kurtzfitters, that may seem an extreme to have to go, but all artists have been pushed, all male artists at least in the 20th century, have been pushed to extremes to give some new, and therefore, as they are new, some real expression to their feeling about women. For many men, the only way they could arrive at it is through love of daughters. Charles Ives, at the turn of the century, has this beautiful little song to his two daughters called Two Little Flowers. Though that's that's an extremely sentimental, we would say today, evocation of women. And daughters haven't had all that much luck with their fathers either across this time. The piece is beautifully sung, by the way, by Evelyn Lear, and that probably still is available on a Columbia record of American scenes, American poets, songs of Charles Ives. Sentimental. Well, some men have gone to great lengths to really serenade their loves without being sentimental. And I think one of the greatest examples of such is by André Breton. André Breton writes the following to his wife. He was, I should pause to say, really the leader of the Surrealist movement in France. Not only at the turn of the century, when it began, but clear up through the war years, when he edited a magazine of surrealism called View in New York City. The unacknowledged leader, though there was no real position or elected leadership, I think maybe Jean Cocteau postures him best when he puts him in the film as a character in his film Orpheus, and has André Breton say to the famous poet who's won the approval of all the people that the people are alone. And to additionally within that film or Cocteau's picturing of André Breton to defend a book of poetry that's nothing but blank pages and a movement called nudism by saying, well, it's better than if the book was filled with bad poems. In addition to these being the aesthetician of this movement, André Breton was also a fine poet, and I'm going to read to you from his poem, Freedom of Love. My wife, with the hair of a wood fire, with the thoughts of heat lightning, with the waste of an hourglass, with the waste of an otter in the teeth of a tiger, my wife, with the lips of a cockade and of a bunch of stars of the last magnitude, with the teeth of tracks of white mice on the white earth, with the tongue of rubbed amber and glass, my wife with the tongue of a stabbed host, with the tongue of a doll that opens and closes its eyes, with the tongue of an unbelievable stone, my wife with the eyelashes of strokes of a child's writing, with the brows of the edge of a swallow's nest, my wife with the brow of slates of a hothouse roof, and of steam on the panes, my wife with shoulders of champagne, and of a fountain with dolphin heads beneath the ice, my wife with wrists of matches, my wife with fingers of luck and ace of hearts, with fingers of mown hay, my wife with armpits of marten and of beechnut and of midsummer night, of privet and of an angelfish nest, with arms of sea foam and of river locks and of a mingling of the wheat and the mill, my wife with legs of flares, with the movements of clockwork and despair, my wife with calves of eider tree pith, my wife with feet of initials, with feet of rings of keys and Java sparrows drinking, my wife with a neck of unpearled barley, my wife with a throat of the valley of gold, of a tryst in the very bed of the torrent, with breasts of night, my wife with breasts of a marine molehill, my wife with breasts of the ruby's crucible, with breasts of the rose's specter beneath the dew, my wife with the belly of an unfolding of the fan of days, with the belly of a gigantic claw, my wife with the back of a bird fleeing vertically, with a back of quicksilver, with a back of light, with a nape of rolled stone and wet chalk, and of the drop of a glass where one has just been drinking, my wife with hips of a skiff, with hips of a chandelier and of arrow feathers, and of shafts of white peacock plumes of an insensible pendulum, my wife with buttocks of sandstone and asbestos, my wife with buttocks of swan's backs, my wife with buttocks of spring with the sex of an iris, my wife with the sex of a mining placer and of a platypus, my wife with a sex of seaweed and ancient sweetmeat, my wife with a sex of mirror, my wife with eyes full of tears, with eyes of purple panoply and of a magnetic needle, my wife with savanna eyes, my wife with eyes of water to be drunk in prison, my wife with eyes of wood always under the axe, my wife with eyes of water level of air, earth, and fire. Still, it's in a tradition, however beautifully, of praising women, which women at least have come to learn to suspect, if not absolutely hate. That, by the way, was translated out of the French by Edward Roditi, and in a beautiful little book with drawings by the painter Arshil Gorky. Women have tended to do better in praise of women in the 20th century, though even they, as you'll hear in the next example, have to go to extremes of language. Edith Sitwell, in her marvelous Facade, you have to imagine one of the most stately ladies of England, whether poor as she sometimes was or well-to-do, moving always alone, though in company with her brothers and her small band of fellow artists, even finally internationally known, as it's said, but lonely and unknown by the people, moving always with a stately grace in dresses of velvet, an elegance that had to make up for all that was often lacking, finally becoming very old and finding, in collaboration with the composer William Walton, finding herself on a stage as part of an entertainment in the English theater. She and Peter Pears reading her poems, and I'm going to play one of hers in praise of some women, accompanied by William Walton's music. Thank you.
Kentucky, through the young fields of the steamboat sea, Jemima, Zulpasta, Dinah, and Deb. Whoop with our father, Sir Joshua Jeb, an admiral red, whose only notion, a butterfly poised on a pig-tailed ocean, is the flippello, sea whose swell breaks on the flawless rocks of hell. Under the skin trees, Deb and Dinah, Jemima, Jocasta, Wolf, and fine of our black hair, sea flash, little sea, than the unleash of the stream bogey. Their cheeks were like nutmeg flowers when swells the rain into foolish silver bells. They said if the dawn you would only snap, or if the power you would once stab, instead of merely roaring a bus or blowing the north or not. We should now stand in the streets of hell, watching the fiesta shutters that fell, with a noise like amber shot is lighted, our moonlight dance is newly lighted, with theater tables cleaned and set, Marina sifting the pearl to our lips, with eyelids closed, the stars of the breeze that flows from gold stars on the incense. Admiral said you could never call. I'll show you it would not do at all. She gets down from table without saying please, forgets her prayers and to cross her knees. In short, her scandalous reputation has shocked the whole of the Hellish nation, and every turban she noirs and me, with whom we should sit our black bogey, would stretch out her simian fingers to strike you, my dears, like a mandolin. For hell is just as properly proper as Greenwich or as Bath or Doctor.
And so, there's something of the original recording, London recording, of Dame Edith Sitwell herself reading. Since then, there's been another recording put out with further music by William Walton, and that's a wonderful record too, but I can't help but prefer hearing the voice of Edith Sitwell herself, and I'll be playing it for you again. Maybe it's because women, of course, know the actual condition and would know that in the language as well. I think the greatest tribute to women has been written by Gertrude Stein in a simple little poem that's also the most widely spread in the English language. You all know it, I'm sure. Rose is a rose is a rose. Everyone makes a joke of it, and it's supposed simply to mean that a poem is a poem and a rose is a rose. But it also means, if you slur the language a little, if you consider that what the rose has meant through all the years of English poetry, and then you slur them a little as you go round and round with that line, you get rose, the name of it, is a rose, a growth process, growing up, is eros, E-R-O-S, the symbol for sex, is arrows, A-R-R-O-W-S, which could be either Cupid's arrows or death, is sorrows, also symbol for death. And birth, sex, and death in relationship to women is what that poem has always meant. So it's not just a toy, delightful as it is, as that. The extremes to which people have to go. Well, of course, it's the problem of making up a new fiction. Let's hear what Kenneth Patchen has to say with that, as he describes honestly his creating of people for his journal of Albion Moonlight.
I have grown into being people of my own size. Jetter the careless murderer. Billy Delian, in whose useless heart treachery and betrayal lie. Thomas Honey, the physical man who has no endeavor worthy of his strength. Carol, the woman unlike any other, like any other. Jacking, the visible body of man's desire on earth. Crystal, the pure child who is in all of us. Yes, the Son of Man. My son and yours, not God's. Because we made God, and we are God. I'm not a voice crying in the wilderness. There's no winter here, no dark, no despair. The lights are going on in my house. My tree is a green tree. My father's ghost sings in its branches.
At the same time that I knew Kenneth Batchin, had just met him in San Francisco, I came to know one of my dearest friends of my life, the poet Michael McClure. And Michael, in the 60s, created an extreme form of language to say everything. He created a book of sound poems that combine his English with the expressions beyond the language of English. And these sound poems, I just have to give you some sense of another kind of elegance. I can see Michael McClure and Dame Edith Sitwell walking along the street together. They'd make a perfect couple in a way. Michael, tall, stately, extremely handsome, a handsomeness that's like coiled steel if you take a hold of him, and with the courage to break out of language and do what made everyone else say he was making a fool of himself. Go and read one of his beast poems, as he called it, to the lions in the San Francisco Zoo, his friend Bruce Conner making this recording.
Silence the eyes. Become the senses. Drive drool from the fresh repugnance thou hold, thou feeling creature. Live not for others, but affect thyself from thy enhanced interior, believing what thou carry, thy trillionic multitude of gra, bushes, and silences. Oh, you are heavier and dimmer than you knew, and more solid and full of pleasure. Grr! 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 Grr!
love of women? Well, a reaching out with his whole animal being and loving, a recognition of his being animal, and reaching out to all the animals of the earth, the whole basis for any kind of human loving. And for the occasion, I want to change the end music for this program and play Charles Ives, another little piece of his, The New River. Thank you.